Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
Hello, this is international Catholic singer Anna Nuzzo, inviting you to join me and Father Dan Cambra of the Marian Fathers on a select international tour's Divine Mercy pilgrimage to Poland and the Czech Republic. It takes place in September of 2019, and we would love for you to join us. For more information, go to my website, annanuzzo.com. Thank you, and God bless.
Do you wish you knew the saints better? Overwhelmed with all the events in Catholic history and just wish you could tie it all together? It's tough work, and even scientists have determined that it takes approximately 400 repetitions to create a new synapse in the brain. Unless it is done with play, in which case it takes between 10 and 20 repetitions. Introducing Saint Cards, where the facts about saints and history are presented in fun and engaging games for ages 4 to 104. Check out Saint Cards at saintcards.com and begin the fun for your family, school, and parish today.
Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
In this AudioCast 54, we figure out what's up with Canada. Truly, are they really all that nice? Sit back and...
One, two, three, listen.
If you're willing to talk, Father Leo is willing to listen. Get ready for a deliciously deep discussion of Shoot the Shiitake with Father Leo.
And welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake with me, your host, Father Leo, for a deep dish discussion with Chris Carr White. He is a born-bred Canadian from the GTA, also known as the Greater Toronto Area. And he shares with me what he's experienced as a Canadian. And to be honest with you, they kind of feel like weird Americans. Sorry, Canada, that's a total stereotype. But guess what? I'm learning from Chris that you have stereotypes of us. And so even though we're neighbors, we are incredibly different people. But at the same time, there is so much in common. We can actually learn from each other. And in my carryout order, you're going to hear what I learned from Chris Carr White, who is truly an epitome of a Canadian. Super nice guy. But a lot to say, a lot of things to talk about. I guess that's how they pronounce it. Well, you can hear his accent, his slight little Canadian accent, when we return with a fun, but also deep and meaningful discussion about what it means to be a neighbor of another country. And so similar and yet so different, we have got a lot to learn. So more with a deep dish discussion in just a moment. This episode of Shoot the Shiitake with me, Father Leo, is brought to you by BrandFox, the premier commerce solution for nonprofits, ministries, and entrepreneurs in all of us. It's where fulfillment, customer service, and e-commerce come together. They handle all of the commercial side with the technology, and they've been a humongous help to me with my movement, Plating Grace. So if you want to learn more, contact BrandFoxLLC.com. That's BrandFoxLLC.com. And welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake with me, your host, Father Leo. I am in a hotel lobby in downtown Toronto. And Chris, thank you for taking the time and being with me.
Thank you very much for having me.
Okay, so let's just get right into all things Canada. What makes Canada so different from the United States? I mean, we are literally a bridge away from each other, but yet it does feel different here. And by the way, if you hear all these elevators coming up and down, it's because, again, we're in a hotel lobby, but go for it.
Well, what makes us different? That's a pretty tough question. We share so much common history, common culture in many ways. Obviously, the stereotypical thing, hockey. It's like our religion.
So we like hockey.
We like hockey. We love it, especially the further you go from the big cities. It's really a staple in the community. But I guess the essence, what feels different in the air when you cross the border, and mm-hmm. a lot of Canadians will think and feel this way, mm-hmm. I guess there's a sense of almost safety. In contemporary Canada, that we, as Canadians, when we cross into the south and then come back over the north, it's a different sense of security that we have when we come back home. Probably most people have that. But in the current climate, violence, guns, things like that, that we are very different from up here.
Okay, so you don't have a lot of guns, you don't have a lot of gangs.
We do have gang violence, we do have gun violence, especially in big cities, Toronto or even out in the rural. But we have a national debate that's about to kick off on banning handguns nationwide.
Handguns. Okay.
Altogether. And assault rifles are already banned. Things like this. So, you know, as a Canadian, when we come from this type of rhetoric and this type of climate, we go down south, it just feels a little scary to us. So that's one big difference in today's. But I don't think that...
Okay, so let me just throw it out here.
Let's go.
And I'm just simply asking the questions. Does that make, in a way, Canadians wimpier or not as tough or just more civil? And the reason I'm asking this is because everyone thinks of Canada and they're just... Everyone is so nice.
Now, I'll tell you this. We're in Toronto.
Yep.
We have a nickname in this city. Not everyone knows it, but it's called Screwface City.
Screwface City?
So everyone's got a little screw face because they're not holding the doors for anybody. They're not saying thank you. They're just pushing their way through the crowds during rush hour traffic.
It's a big city.
Yeah. So, I mean, Toronto doesn't always exemplify all of the Canadian.
And you've grown up in Canada, particularly in Toronto?
In the Toronto area, yeah.
Okay. Yep. So just to describe yourself, because are you like a purebred Canadian through and through?
Well, that's interesting. So I guess from one side of my family, I think we came in the 1870s to the East Coast and then migrated from the UK.
Okay.
And then my other side of the family, I would be second generation, also UK background.
Okay.
So kind of a new and old mix of the Canadian.
And why are you even doing this show? Just full disclosure, we met in a wedding. I was doing a wedding for my cousin, and Chris, you're friends with the groom.
And the bride.
and the bride, okay. And we just started chatting, and now you're doing this show, and it's interesting to try to find guests, first of all, mm-hmm. who are just willing to shoot the shiitake with the priest is weird. Why are you doing it?
I think you struck me as somebody a little bit unconventional in some ways, not in a bad way, but from a man of the cloth who's interested in hearing the gritty side, no holds barred, unfiltered from the people. Normally, my perception of people in positions of, I guess, religion, want to sanitize a lot of discussion.
Okay, no, I want to keep things sane
and
eventually sanitized.
Yes.
But in order to clean a pile of crap up, you got to deal with the crap.
And you got to see it for what it is or hear it for what it might be,
and
right?
And this is why I'm asking. Canada is so, in a way, pristine looking. You've got a very handsome prime minister who kind of comes across as, you know, all things to all people.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just get right into it and find out what is Canada really like and, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly. What do you love about Canada? And then what do you not like?
Well, I'll tell you this. Canadians like to sit on a high horse compared to our American counterparts. We like to look at ourselves as, I wouldn't say we, I'd say there's a common rhetoric within the Canadian psyche, I think, that likes to think of ourselves as better than our U.S. brothers and sisters.
So there is kind of like a looking down.
There is
the
a high
neighbor.
Horse, and that comes from our history of we like to think we don't have the racial and segregation type of history that the U.S. had more recently than us, or, you know, civil wars about slavery. So we often have our noses in the air, but really, we share all the same problems. It's a bit more subtle up here. It's a bit more clandestine up here.
Clandestine.
It's
Boy,
a bit more polite up here.
Yeah,
there is. Yeah.
I mean, are you kidding me?
No.
Because it just seems, again, so nice. Now, I will say that the coasts, if we're going to break this down geographically, how would you consider, and I'm going to, sorry to say it, but what are the stereotypes of the east side of Canada to the northeast, and then, of course, the mid and then the west?
Yeah, well, stereotypes, it's pretty fun, I guess. We have Newfoundland is a province out east, the furthest east, and they call it the Rock sometimes. But Newfie jokes is something that we all grow up with here.
What kind of jokes are they?
Some of them can be pretty bad.
Like what? They're inbred or something?
Yes. Yeah, so,
okay, that's what we say about the South in America.
Yeah, similar, but in a different way. It's a question of their intellectual capacity a lot of the time. And really, they're the most beautiful, polite people in the world. Fantastic people. But there's that type of stereotype out there. Quebec, oh, we've got a lot of stereotypes about Quebec.
Like what?
Oh, French. I'll try to be polite here, but poutine.
Poutine is simply just...
That's a Quebecer thing, ultimately.
But poutine is just basically potato.
Well, cheese curds, gravy, fries, things like that.
It's a little delicious.
But we love to make fun of the Quebecers, especially out here in Ontario.
Okay.
The Plains of Abraham, when the British beat the French, and we took ownership of this part of North America.
Okay, so this is a question for you.
Yeah.
The British beat the French, you are subject in a way to the Queen of England.
We are. She's our head of state.
But you speak French as a national language. Doesn't that seem
one
a little bipolar?
One of two national languages. And I guess that would be to placate the French population in those early days.
Okay.
Because, for example, in the big decisive victory where the English defeated the French, I believe in that area, the French outnumbered the English 7-1.
Okay.
So how do you placate?
So you want to keep that French just to not piss anybody off.
Yeah, and before this whole concept of multiculturalism, there was more of a concept of biculturalism.
So let's continue on to the stereotypes.
Yeah.
So we've got some intergenerational, basically
incestuous. Oh, yes.
I mean, incestuous relations. And then, of course, we're talking about French, who you beat.
We like to remind them of that in English-speaking Canada.
And the capital is where?
Ottawa. So Ottawa sits right on the Ottawa River, just separating Quebec and Ontario.
Okay.
Quebec and Ontario being the two largest provinces, Quebec being the French-speaking province, Ontario being the biggest English-speaking province. And the capital is kind of placed there to show a bridge between the two nations that were kind of forged to make Canada.
Let's go to the Midwest. What are those people like? And
well,
what's the stereotype
there? We've got the prairies. So we have the prairies, which constitutes Saskatchewan, Manitoba.
Mm-hmm.
Saskatchewan.
Saskatchewan. And the people are Saskatoons.
Saskatoon is the capital.
Is the capital.
Regina, I think, is actually the capital.
But okay, Saskatoon's hold on a second. A big Let's just city. Make sure you said Regina?
Regina.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was ready to say I'm like, sounded interesting.
We don't have pennies anymore, but if you could see a penny, it would say DC Regina, and that's something in Latin about the queen and have the queen's head on it.
It'd be pronounced Regina, but I mean, you guys made it
Regina,
sound
Regina, Saskatchewan.
Edgy. Okay, and then the Saskatchewan, that's where the Bigfoot is. It's like kind of like,
well,
let me just get kind of really ridiculous and stereotypical.
Yeah, well, the prairies, there's a bigger native population per capita out there. So you've got a big rural-urban divide. You've got a couple of small cities, and then you've got a lot of rural population out
there. Okay, so a lot of rural.
And very different. And so one of the jokes we have is your dog runs away in Saskatchewan. Well, you can look out east or out west, whatever direction he ran, you can see him running for days.
Okay.
And so flat, so long, so boring.
Okay, but I'll be honest with you, as an American, that joke is pretty lame. it's still like a kind version of it. Like in America, they would say about planes, it's a flyover state.
Well, yeah. So, I was about to say, the next thing is, if you're going to do a cross-country road trip, you'd prefer to skip the prairies.
Skip the prairies.
It's one of the most boring drives you can go.
It is pretty boring, I will admit that. And then you get to the West Coast.
Well, before that, we've got Alberta.
Oh, Alberta.
That's our Texas.
That's your Texas.
That's our Texas. So those are the big, what do you call it, coal rolling trucks.
Yeah, they're cowboys. Conservative.
Very conservative. Very,
Heartland
very
people.
Very, very. And they're even talking more recently about the concept of separating from Canada.
You can't separate. My God, you just have to kind of like build a wall around Alberta, which is not that big.
Well, yeah. So Alberta, there are Texas, there are cowboys. They're not as big as Texas proportionally, population-wise, to Canada. Only a couple million out there. But
okay.
Economic engine, oil country.
Yeah, things so like Canada that. Would be screwed if they did separate.
Oh, yeah. But they're Yeehaw. That's the kind of stereotype we got.
Okay.
And then moving out further, we've got BC, British Columbia.
Okay.
Hippies. That's one of the big ones.
So, like,
we
the whole
got.
West Coast is a left coast.
Yeah, there you go. They're basically an extension of California.
Let me give you my experience of it all. My experience is what I see on HGTV.
Oh, yeah. Okay, okay.
Everyone is primarily, who's in charge, white.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you have people who have a crap load of money coming in from Asia.
Yep, that's a big one.
And they
one.
Basically bought most of Toronto and all of Vancouver.
So that's a very funny. You want to hear a good joke.
With the workers being kind of like Indian.
Yep.
Who would be kind of like our Mexican.
Yep.
Who are doing kind of
temporary foreign worker program is what we have up
but
here.
But very temporarily permanent.
Yeah, well, it leads to permanent,
But so you don't have a lot of Latinos here.
Not so much.
Not so much, but you would have them from other countries, which are kind of subject to the Queen, India particularly.
Well, yeah. So I just want to say one joke about Vancouver.
Okay, go for it.
Because you mentioned that you touched on this, and it's a bit of a touchy joke. But they say the most beautiful city in all of China, Vancouver.
And I mean, I was just there.
There you go, right?
They don't speak a lot of English.
Well, there's a lot of migration from China into Vancouver.
So let's talk about migration because that is a hot topic, at least for us in America.
It's getting hotter here. People think that we're nice and polite and we're just open doors.
Now,
but
you're
not.
You're not a bitter person, so I don't see you as kind of like, get out of my country. And when we did this wedding, you were like one of the only white people there.
Yeah. Well, the greater Toronto area, the GTA, super diverse. We like to tout it as one of the most diverse, if not the most diverse city in the world.
Okay.
But I think a lot of the discourse now is that we're not immune to some of this kind of populist or reactionary feelings that have been spreading across a lot of the Western world.
Okay.
Not just like the Trump effect, but you look at Europe, Sweden, France, like all these right-wing nationalistic type of anti-migration, Italy, parties are taking office and we think, oh, we're Canadians, we're better than
that.
So
even just that language, anti-immigration, where did that come from?
I think if you look at the geopolitical situation in a lot of the West and Germany and Europe, the EU, the migration crisis of 2015 and whatnot has spurred a lot of anti-immigration rhetoric.
Okay.
I think it's a long-standing term, but it's a bit more normalized and a bit more in center stage right now.
So if someone were to say we're pro-legal immigration.
Yeah.
Would that be considered anti-immigration?
No, but you can see, I guess, in the U.S., as soon as someone says, oh, I'm all for immigration and just not illegal immigration, you're automatically branded a closed-door protectionist.
And what do you think about that? Because, I mean, why do people even care about what's happening in America?
Well, yeah. So, again, like we were saying, America sneezes, Canada catches a cold.
Uh-huh.
All we have to do is turn on the TV. Half our channels
but
are American.
Why?
We don't have much of a choice. We can see Buffalo's,
you do have a choice.
Buffalo's broadcast reaches all the way to Toronto. So we.
No, but I mean, I guess the whole point is we don't intentionally seek out Canadian TV.
No, not at all.
We don't. I mean, HGTV, I get it, has a lot of Canadian shows just because the marketing at one point made it possible to do that. With a lot of house flipping because there was not a lot of infrastructure to build a lot of new houses. And it's kind of the European influence, I think. But we're actively not seeking Telemundo, although it is part of a cable package in the United States. Why do people even give a flying rip about the United States and the culture?
I guess just the center of our universe, really. We're very small. If you look at geographically speaking, in the distribution of our population, 80% of all Canadians live within 200 miles of the border. So we think that we're
okay, give me that statistic again because I just was...
Yeah, so 80% of all Canadians live within 200 miles of the U.S. border.
So 80% of all of Canadians live...
Within 200 miles of the border.
And that's nothing.
Yeah. So we think we're this true north, strong and free. We're wide north, living in igloos all the way up. Nope. Vast majority of us live within a 2-hour, 3-hour drive of the border.
Is it because you want to keep your enemies closer?
Well,
or is it just because you love us all so much? I mean,
I think we're really just, we're not as different as we like to make ourselves out to be.
Now, okay. So in that regard, what are this? I mean, we can figure out what the similarities are. I mean, obviously, your language and such like that. But how about politics? How different are you with the prime minister?
So everyone, like you mentioned, we've got a good-looking prime minister.
Yeah, he's a handsome fellow.
He's handsome. He speaks well.
He kind of looks like a doofus sometimes, well, though, when he does.
I'm not a fan.
Oh, you're not a fan? Not a fan at all. He is very popular.
I think he's all style, no substance.
No, wait a second. Where are you coming from, like, politically, so, if you don't mind me asking?
I would call myself a centrist. I think if I were in America, I wouldn't be registered with either party.
You'd be an independent.
I think I'd be an independent.
Okay.
And then depending on where I was in America, depending on what the landscape was and whatnot, I might throw my vote one way or another.
I mean, democracy as a republic is pretty complicated.
Yeah.
But what's it like to have a prime minister and then you can go ahead and spout off on Trudeau if you
wish. Oh, yeah. Well, not one of these. So we have our Trump style, what would you call them? Trumpists, trumpeteers, Trumpansies is what some people say.
Trumpansies, okay.
So I'll tell you this. So we have a very similar dynamic. We have a left and a right. We have two big parties, the liberals, left, like the Democrats, the conservatives, right, like the Republicans. They are taking 2/3 to 3/4 of all of our votes.
Okay.
We do have a further left party called the NDP. They take about 1/5 of the vote at best. Then we have a tiny little green party and, you know, a couple other regional parties, like Quebec has a federal party about separation and things like that. But the majority of voters are center left, center right, similar dynamic.
Sure. That in America, most of them should be, but you hear only the extremes.
Well, that's what I mean. So we've seen in our case as well, the fringes are starting to dominate the discourse within the party, and then that's the policies that they take to the election. So traditionally, our center left party, the Liberals, were traditionally centrist.
Okay.
And pro-business, but pro-social programming and social liberties and things like that. However, the more recent years, they've taken a big left turn to kind of chase off the further left party.
Okay.
So they've adopted a lot of very progressive rhetoric and very progressive policies.
Okay.
However,
now you keep going.
Yeah, sorry. So we have federally, we also have provincial politics. The same, you guys have your US or nationwide and your state politics. We might have Trudeau up in the federal level, but we've just seen 3 or 4 provinces flip from left-wing governments to right-wing governments in a big way.
Is it a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, I like to think that at the federal level, you have one, and then at the provincial level, you have the other, kind of like a checks and balances type of thing.
Okay.
So you can't have
both.
And that's
you just being truly
independent.
That's
just me being, you know, you got to keep it all in check one way or the other.
You seem like an educated person. What is your educational background?
I studied geography in school, in university.
But you stay up with politics. Is that true for most of your political?
Geopolitics was one of my jams.
I
like the world issues. A little bit.
Is that true for most of your other contemporary millennials?
I would say the vast majority are headline news level interest.
Okay.
And that's about as deep as most people get.
So they're not really deep then?
No, but you do get few, maybe a quarter or a fifth, who might actually drill into the stories and take a certain issue or topic or theme that is super important to them. Like, we do have activists up here. We do have politically engaged young people. But the most part, popular culture, politics is boring until you got a Vogue front page prime minister. Then politics is cool. Or until you have our Toronto mayor, Rob Ford.
Oh, yeah.
All the wrong reasons being on the front page of the news, right?
He's like doing lines and...
Yeah, so then you have politics is becoming interesting, or at least it's within people's everyday discourse a little bit.
But so if you're unfamiliar with that previous mayor was caught on camera...
Smoking crack.
Smoking crack, doing cocaine lines, and just basically acting like a complete doofus.
Yeah. Yeah, he passed away a year or two ago to cancer, but funnily enough, like I told you a few seconds ago, we've had a lot of provinces flip from left to right recently. In big ways, majority governments. The new premier of Ontario is Doug Ford, the late Rob Ford's brother.
Oh.
So we had the mayor of Toronto, Rob Ford.
God, this sounds incestuous.
And now we've got the premier of Ontario, Doug Ford, who just won an overwhelming majority in Ontario.
Oh my gosh.
Just a few months ago.
So that cokehead's brother is now...
Hey, there was a rumor that our new premier, Doug Ford, used to sling hash in his high school days in the 80s in Toronto.
Sling hash? Are we talking about corned beef hash or other type of hash?
I'll let you decide.
All right. Well, when we come back, more with Chris Carr-White.
That's the one.
And we will be right back in Canada shooting some poutine here with me, Father Leo. We'll be back in just a moment. this week. For our premium subscribers, those who donate $10 or more each month, they will receive a special show delivered right to their inbox. And this week, I'm going to answer questions that I get online. And these are going to be questions regarding faith, a little bit of morality, and even how I come across on Twitter and Instagram. Because I can come across a little edgy at times, because that's what I'm all about. I don't pull any punches, and neither will I when I answer these questions. So for those who donate $10 or more each month, you'll be getting that in your inbox. Thank you for all of your support. And if you are not a premium member yet, you can always do so by going to shootthishiitake.com. Again, that's shootthishiitake2eyes.com. And welcome back for our second part of the Deep Dish discussion. I am in Canada, oh Canada, which is basically famous for me for a couple things. Nice people, what I would call a bipolar personality of French as well as English. They do drive on the correct side of the road here, which is kind of interesting. And then, of course, who doesn't love some Michael Bublé, some Diana Krall, and who else? We're talking Justin Bieber.
What about Drake?
Oh, Drake. Yeah, see, but I'm not...
I'm just teasing. I don't
see,
think...
See, Drake. Yeah, he got big very recently, yeah, and I remember. Yeah. Well, anyway.
We got the Biebs. We got Drake.
You got a lot of good things going on up in here
not
in Canada.
Too bad.
I mean,
not too bad.
I really enjoy coming up here, but can I tell you, I think you're right. People are snobby here.
Yeah, and just on that note, you're mentioning, you know, Bieber and Drake. You know, a lot of these are the children of Toronto, if you will. Toronto is looked at in Canada as the big, egotistical, annoying center of the universe, right?
Sure.
We're the New York North, if you will. But
I guess my question would be, why do you keep comparing yourself to America? I mean, there's like, I go up here and they have like this whole Times Square situation. You have to put up all the big screens and such like that.
Young and Dundas Square,
I mean, like I go to Dubai and everyone tries to be like every other best version of the country.
Yeah.
Why can't you, like what would then essentially be Canadian?
You know what? I think historically, Toronto, for example, was a very Anglo city, very British.
Very white.
Well, very, very British, very Protestant.
Uh-huh.
Shops were closed on Sundays, every Sunday. It was very English, no alcohol for many, many years in a lot
Boring.
Of our districts.
Yeah.
And then I think there was a period in the 20th century where, like, our architecture, we looked like England.
Yeah,
you know, in
it
many
does
ways.
Look like European.
And then things changed. I couldn't pinpoint it. You'd have to talk to a Toronto historian a bit more about the specific decades. But the development started to become very North American, very, very American-esque. And I think we've since wanted to be a big skyscraper American city, North American city.
And that's what it looks like.
Yeah, nowadays. But preceding this big change, we were very different.
And when I come to Canada, people's minds are a little bit blown because they don't see that white bread European kind of experience. Literally, I feel like I'm in China or I'm in Bangladesh.
Yeah. And I'll tell you this. So this is not an uncommon scenario for urban centers. So
in Canada.
In Canada. If you drive an hour north of the city, hour east or west, you can't go south, you'd be in the lake.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to find some of that, I guess, the boonies, we'd call it, the cottage country, where you'll see small town Ontario. It's very different than the big city of Toronto. So the urban centers are very, very diverse. All the population, all the newcomers, we all kind of cluster in the big cities where the services are, the jobs are, and the multiculturalism happens here.
Uh-huh.
Really doesn't happen out there. So we kind of have a tale of two worlds, really, just like in the U.S. You look at an electoral map, let's say of Michigan or something, and you'll see all these red clusters, blue clusters where the cities are.
That's right.
Voting Democrat.
And that's true for you all here as well.
We'll have the same type of dynamic. The urban centers will be kind of...
So I guess my question would be, do you like it? What are your feelings? Like, now let's just get to know Chris Cartwright.
Yeah.
I found you somewhat fascinating that, first of all, you came up to me and introduced yourself and talked to me, man. I mean, like, I was just minding my business, getting a dessert at the wedding reception, and you were like, what possessed you to come up and talk with me, and then let's talk about how you feel about being in Canada as a young Canadian?
Well, your service was very fascinating, and then the fact you came from Balmore. How do you say it down
Balmer.
There? Balmer.
Yeah.
Yeah, some Baltimore.
That's fascinating to you.
I'll tell you. Well, no, but you had a kind of a worldview that was very interesting and, you know, similar to how you would expect to see a bunch of white folks up in Canada.
But that's interesting, because I asked you a lot of questions. Whoa. How did you know what my view was?
Well, hearing your service, you could see there's some street smart edge in what you're doing. But listen. So, you know, what you just said about seeing Canadians are expecting to see, you know, a certain version of Canada that's sure. in your mind, then coming to Toronto or Vancouver and seeing something totally different. When I think of Baltimore, do I think of someone who looks like you? Not necessarily. I might think of The Wire.
Sure.
I might think of some old cops, old white cops, and some, you know, some
beating,
you know,
up
inner city black youth.
Black kids, that's right.
You know? So
not beating up, but
so I was like, hey,
them.
You're yeah. from this place called Baltimore, but it doesn't, you know, look like you should be from Baltimore.
Sure.
What's going on? You know, so it's breaking down these, I guess, stereotypes type of thing and just piquing interest in a way.
And so you came up to me and you just started chit-chatting.
Yeah.
And
shooting the shiitake
and then you had no idea that I was going to put you on my show.
No,
several
no.
months later.
No, not at all.
But
not
the reason why I did it is because you were at least honest with me. Mm. A lot of people, when they get a microphone in front of their faiths, they start sounding like a prime minister. They
oh,
all
yes.
say the right things.
Indeed, yes, yes.
And you didn't do that. You were kind of critical of culture.
Yes.
So as a young man, you're in your 30s or young 30s, or you just turned 30, right? And you are working in the world here, and are you living your dream, number one?
I'm lucky in a lot of ways compared to some folks, but it's a life's not been an easy path all the time, right?
Okay,
and,
but it always looks like it. I mean, you guys have free healthcare.
Oh, yeah, but it comes out of our paychecks every month in taxes, right?
Like, how much taxes do you get taken away?
So it depends on which tax bracket you're a part of, but you can see up to half of your earnings wiped out in taxes at various levels, provincial, federal.
So basically, half of your paycheck goes to
taxes.
Local and federal government.
Yeah, provincial and federal.
But then you pay taxes on everything else.
Every purchase you make. I think every liter of gas, we're spending 35 cents or so.
And okay, so 30% minimum,
ish.
30% yeah. of every dollar is continuing to go to government.
Well, that's just for gas, but we have a harmonized sales tax. 13% of every dollar spent is taxed.
13%.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
It's not too different than some of your states.
Yeah, so we got 10 to... And then how about tipping?
We have a tipping culture here for sure.
What is it?
15% is the bare minimum in place.
15
like
is the bare minimum.
Well, that's what we would say. That's kind of like, okay, you're acceptable as a consumer. But I think 18 is what people are kind of striving to,
okay.
to, you know, say, you know what? I'm not just the bare minimum type of person. Right?
Got it.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of money in taxes.
Oh, yeah.
And then, of course, extra gratuities. How does one live in the city? Like, how much is the rent for some place in, say, downtown Toronto?
So downtown Toronto recently just put out a real estate study, or board put out a study. The average rent price for a one-bedroom in the city of Toronto is now $2,200 Canadian.
That fact came to your mind. Did you Google that or
no,
something?
No, my rent is 22 on the nose.
Your 22 is on the nose.
Yeah, and that I realize is actually just under the average, because the study came out, it's like $2,230 is the new average rent for a one-bedroom
condo. And
what's
the general income? Medium income, mind?
The median income of Toronto is different. It's such a big city. You've got Bay Street lawyers. You've got, you know, fast food workers. I think it's somewhere around a household median income. I think is somewhere around 50 to 60. I'd have to double check.
50 to 60 Canadian dollars, which would be in about 45.
And that's, I think that would be about household.
Household.
So that could be two incomes in a household. I believe it's around there. I'd have to check my stats, Canada.
And things are expensive in Canada.
Yeah. They're not cheap. They're not cheap.
They're
Our gas
cheap.
Is a lot more expensive than yours.
But then you also make your way across the bridge to United States and you go shopping all the time.
Yeah, the conversion rate's kind of killing us right now.
We
used to be
rate,
great when we were close to parity or 90 cents to your dollar, but now we're sitting around 75, 77.
Yeah.
It's almost not worth it at this point.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So you growing up Canadian...
Mm-hmm.
Is it much different from when you were growing up? Tell me about
that. So let me tell you, not just like in the GTA. Well, I'll stick to the GTA and speak to what you know. I grew up in the 90s. I'm a 90s baby, born late 80s.
Okay.
But
keep going.
Well, yeah.
You're fine. Kidding with you. You're good.
But this concept of mass immigration and whatnot, and like I said, people kind of cluster to our big cities. Toronto being our biggest city.
It's a huge city.
We've seen a demographic shift of pretty epic proportions.
Tell me about that, and how do you feel about it as a question?
Yeah, no, we can definitely chat about that. So I'd say it was the 90s, where I think it was a conservative government who kind of opened up our immigration policy into greater numbers. Previously, Canada used to be a very strict country when it came to migration, and it usually, you know, British and European migration sources.
Let me just make sure I understand. Yeah. You said a conservative.
Yeah. Pro-business. Open the doors, more workers, more tax dollars being generated.
That's right.
Things
and
like
also
that.
Because there was a low birth rate in Canadians.
That's the justification. So we, I guess, as a nation, opened up our immigration policy. And now we're sitting at about just under 1% immigration rate of our total population annually. So about 300 to 320,000 people annually are being admitted through our immigration program. We also have temporary students who come in who often end up staying and becoming permanent residences. We have also a couple hundred thousand temporary foreign workers every year.
Mm-hmm.
So any one year, we could have 500,000 plus.
And how does that affect you?
Well, you think about things like prices of rent or services in a place like Toronto.
You figured that it would be cheaper.
Well,
but it's not.
Supply and demand fundamentals,
there you
right?
Go.
If Toronto, the city proper, has 80,000 to 100,000 new residents every year,
mm-hmm.
we're not building 100,000 new homes or dwellings every year. So it's just going to be a constant march upwards
sure.
into affordability issues. And we're starting to talk about...
How can these people afford this money?
Well, that's the thing. A lot of immigrants...
I mean, these rents,
we think that opening our doors to immigration is a great, beautiful thing, and then we do. And then those who do make it over the hurdles and through the hoops to get here are often living in poverty. They don't have the language skills because we have very lax language requirements. So they're looked over for
jobs.
How
do you feel about that? Do you think that there should be a language requirement?
You know what? I do believe we should be a lot more strict with our language requirements. You can see, let's say, in York Region, where your cousin lives mm-hmm. area, you go to get a license in Canada or in this type of neighborhood or area in Toronto, it might be offered in a dozen different languages.
Oh, yeah.
So you're getting a government-issued permit to drive a vehicle, and you don't necessarily have to speak a common language. So how do you interact with someone when you get in an accident? How do you talk to a police officer? Yeah.
How do you interact?
Well, I would say everyone is generally polite, but we do have what is called ethnic enclaves, if you will. Like you mentioned about Vancouver, it can be very, you know,
it's predominantly Chinese. It's what it feels like.
There are cities in GTA like Brampton, very predominantly South Asian, or Mississauga, very uh-huh. South Asian, where I grew up, which aren't bad things when we're not having a moral assessment of these things as good or bad. They just are. It's uh-huh. a phenomenon, and we're observing that phenomenon. But that comes with challenges. How do these big groups who now coexist kind of in a insular way? They're not in Vancouver, let's just say. You don't necessarily have to speak English to live in some neighborhoods over there.
What is being done to
not
be
much.
More culturally integrational?
There's not much. It's like, so we celebrate here, in my opinion, multiculturalism.
Uh-huh.
We don't necessarily, whereas the big difference, so you're coming back to one of the first questions, the U.S., you guys have, I guess, what you call a melting pot. Whoever gets here is thrown into the pot, stirred around, and now you're part of the big American stew.
Sure.
Right? We have always said, no, we've got a cultural mosaic, whatever that means, right?
We say mosaic.
Okay. Well, that. So you know, this concept of diversity and multiculturalism is very noble, but in the way it's being implemented, in my opinion, is just causing a lot of parallel societies to be set up, where you have people living in kind of clusters and groups and language, and who don't necessarily, they might coexist in a spatial way, in a geographic sense,
mm-hmm.
but not necessarily in a cultural sense.
And how do you feel about that?
I don't think that is a good thing.
Okay.
I think, you know, diversity and everything is a great thing to
Who doesn't
champion,
think diversity
right?
is a good thing? The
well,
only people who I don't think likes diversity right. are religious yeah. despots. Like, well. I just look at some of our, you know... these countries with extreme religious political views.
Saudi
they don't want
Arabia.
Any different.
Yeah, yeah. That was me coughing into the mic. No, of course. It's just, you know, it's not disagreeing about what. In my opinion, it's disagreeing about how.
Okay.
How are we implementing this type of immigration? So you look at a little country like New Zealand. Typically, they have a left-wing government,
mm-hmm.
Labour, which is kind of like our Liberals. And they've actually are talking about slashing immigration to their country in half. They're banning all foreign people from owning property. And this is because they had a rate of immigration that was really high, 1% of their population. that's a big number to take on every year. So sure. From a strictly demographic perspective, that's a lot of change. That's a lot of impact on supply and
but
demand.
You've got for, so much land
well, that's
out
the thing.
Here.
Everyone says, oh, we're so big. We have so much unsettled space. Well, no one's going and settling the mid, you know, our prairies. Everyone's clustering to where the jobs are. Toronto.
Yeah.
It's a rat race. And so you're just adding more and more
words,
folks to the competition or to the, you know, for services, for...
So who's going to farm our food, for God's sake?
Well, that's our temporary foreign workers, let me tell you.
Okay.
So we admit a couple hundred thousand temporary foreign workers every year to work these jobs
that Canadians
don't want. Your seasonal agricultural workers.
So you really aren't any different from the United States at all.
We're a little bit stricter when it comes to enforcing these types of programs.
Stricter.
So
tell me about that.
Yeah. So like, let's say a TFW, temporary foreign worker, can come to Canada for 6 to 8 months, then they have to leave. And then you can have, I think, a return of up to four seasons before they're not allowed to come back.
Let's talk about religion. Tell me about the role of religion, just because you are
very
interesting.
Catholic, non-Catholic.
Right? Okay.
I'd like to think I'm very secular.
Okay.
A little bit agnostic.
Okay.
Grew up in the Anglican Church.
Okay.
So that's a Protestant segment Church of England type of thing.
I was going to say something very stereotypical.
Yeah, there you go. Fish and chips. So I don't think religion holds any sway over life in Ontario.
Okay.
However, I'll touch on a few big ticket political items. So Quebec, like I said, a lot of provinces have flipped left to right recently.
Mm-hmm.
Quebec just voted in an overwhelming majority for a Quebec kind of right-wing party. But Quebec is very, very secular in many ways.
Oh, it is.
So there's a current debate raging about banning all public servants from wearing any religious gear. And they're traditionally a Catholic province. So if you look at their legislative assembly, that's like their state house or whatever.
Sure.
They've got a big cross in the main room.
Sure.
It's like, well, we're talking about banning anyone from wearing, let's say, a Muslim headscarf.
Sure.
Or a kippah,
sure,
the Jewish headwear. But we have a cross on our stateroom floor.
So it's kind of hypocritical.
Kind of hypocritical. But then the defense is, well, it's a bit more of a cultural artifact than it is a religious,
wow,
you know, item, right? So we have this type of debate going on over in Quebec, but they have traditionally... Well, they went through something called the Quiet Revolution in the 60s and 70s, where they had a stranglehold of society by the Catholic Church,
uh-huh,
where they almost wrestled themselves free, so per se, I'm doing air quotes here, where they are very, very secular, very big separation from the Catholic Church and the way Quebec is run as a political unit or whatnot. So it's very interesting over there. But over here in Ontario, let's just touch on this.
Uh-huh.
We've got a debate that's kind of fermenting, I would say, about public school funding.
Sure.
Because we have two school systems, a Catholic school board and a public school board.
This is, I know, because I do a lot of work with your school board, and I know that the government supplies money for Catholic schools, particularly as a law.
Yeah, it's in law, enshrined in law, and this was coming back to our French and English differences.
Wow, there's so much here, man. I love this because I'm just across the country. Your money is different. It's so shiny.
Oh, ours is colorful.
It's so shiny and kind of like plasticky, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it is.
But we got to bring this to a close, and I would love to continue the conversation with you. But let me ask you before we end here. What can I do? You don't know me. You only saw me as a priest doing this wedding, and you obviously enjoyed the ceremony enough that you were willing to talk with me.
Mm-hmm.
But let me just ask you, what do you think I can do to be a good priest for someone like you?
Someone like me, who's not necessarily a part of the flock per se.
Yeah.
I think you're already doing great things. You're building a bridge. You're building a connection. There's some discourse and dialogue that we're now engaging in that I never would have thought I would be having with someone from the Catholic Church. Never in my life. You know, it's a very foreign entity to me. So the fact that you're out and about in the world, out and about,
out and about
in the world, and you're actually building some sort of bridge of dialogue between different people, not just across the border, but echelons of life and class and culture and race. I think that's fascinating. And I think we need more of this. We can disagree on things, but we need to be able to talk about it. We need to be able to put it out on the table and dissect it. So I think you're showing that there's a platform that we can do it on or have these discussions on. And I think that's super important. And that's one of the things when I first met you, I thought was absolutely fascinating, that I would never have thought I would have this type of platform with someone in a religious order. I always thought discussions would be kind of managed or mitigated or shaped. But you're giving a wide open platform to talk and actually put it all out on the table.
Wow.
So
wow.
I think you're doing it. And this is crossing generational boundaries as well.
Yeah, he just called me old, ladies and gentlemen, just to let you know. And I think the other thing I did for him was I gave him breakfast. Listen, when we come back, I'm going to come back with my carryout order. What did I learn from Chris? How is this conversation affecting me, helping me to be a better priest, not just for the people in America, but for the people in, oh, Canada? We'll be back in just a moment from a lobby. Boy, was that annoying to hear all of this noise in the background.
There you go.
Well, we'll be back in just a minute. As a speaker that I travel around the country and around the world, it's always a pleasure to meet so many people at my events called Feed My Faith. These are one-night events where I talk, I cook, I serve, I entertain, but most importantly, I feed you the faith that really nourishes you, body, mind, and spirit. So if you're interested in booking a Feed My Faith event or a parish mission in 2020 and 2021, all you've got to do is go to fatherleofeeds.com/events. Again, that's Father Leo, all spelled out, fatherleofeeds.com/events, and I will see you at a Feed My Faith event or upcoming mission. And welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake with me, Father Leo, for a reflection, a carryout order of my deep dish discussion with Chris Carr White. Can't thank him enough for taking some time and just hanging out. And again, as I mentioned, we met at a wedding. I was doing my cousin's wedding, and he is a friend of the groom and the bride. And I was just at the dessert stand, and where else would I be? Hello. And he comes up to me, and he was very specifically just wanting to talk. First of all, for a millennial, good for him. That's like one of the most mature millennial things I've seen in a long time. And we started talking to the point where I was getting tired of standing because we were talking so long, not getting tired of him, but getting tired of standing. We had talked like for about 20 minutes standing, and I got a dessert in my hand, for God's sakes, right? And finally I said, do you want to continue our conversation and sit down? And we talked for another hour. And as we're talking, I'm learning about who this guy is, and I'm kind of fascinated that he fits the stereotype perfectly of what a Canadian is, but at the same time breaks a little bit of my stereotypes, which is why I wanted to share this deep discussion with you about what it's like to be Canadian. And there were several things that I was fascinated by that just gives me a lot to think about. This idea of being separated by a border, we all know that that is obviously kind of front page news. Do we build a wall? You know, the fact is, it really depends on the kind of neighbor that you are. And if I were to compare and contrast the neighbors from the south and the neighbors to the north, we have some unique characteristics that we can highlight. Canadians, they kind of want to come to America just to visit, but they're perfectly content going back up north. And our neighbors from the south, and they are brothers and sisters, so I'm not treating them in any disrespect whatsoever. They want to come in and they want to stay, and they, in a sense, want to bring their country into the United States. And that is where the problem lies. You know, the kind of neighbors that we have is really about integrating who we are into a country where we want to go. It would be no different from me, say, going into a neighborhood or a country that is very different from mine. And I say, you know what? I'm not going to be happy unless I'm doing things the way it was done in my country that I left. Can you see the kind of illogical nature of badly understood immigration? There is definitely a border between America and Canada, and I've got to show my papers going into their country, and I've got to show my papers coming back into my own country. But that's what makes us peaceful. We respect the borders. And please don't think I'm a Trumpian or a Trumpeteer or a Trumpanzee, I think is what he called it. That was a pretty cool name, actually. Not at all, because I respected the border proposition when Democrats, President Obama and Bill Clinton, when they supported it. You know, and even Jimmy Carter, as peaceful loving as he was. And yes, I am that old, so don't judge me. But the idea of being a good neighbor to the ones from the North and the South are those who respect the borders. But what's interesting also is that so many of them, what he said, like 80% live within 300 miles of the border, which means they don't live far from Americans, you know? So there is always going to be this comparing and contrasting. What I also figured out is while they are nicer, they're just like everybody else. They have their own prejudices, gosh, against even each other, as we would about the left coast or the right coast, the South, the Hicks in the South, or the flyover states in the Midwest. First of all, I think all of that is ridiculous. I've traveled this country, and all of America is pretty darn awesome. All different, but all pretty darn awesome. But we're a little bit more blunt with it. I think the formality that they have, and first of all, truly having a language other than English, they have kind of the Queen's English approach. I mean, just even the way they talk, that slight little accent, I don't know, just makes them sound nicer. But that doesn't mean that they can't be just as mean. So let's make sure we know that just because they're a country that is incredibly polite, that doesn't always make them nice. But they are nice. But they're finding out that the immigration is creating tension in them. So what's interesting about that is I recorded this show a couple months ago. And so for me to hear it again and talk about New Zealand, as he was talking about New Zealand, and he's pretty up to date with all of these things, who would have ever imagined that New Zealand would have gone through what they're going through now? In part, even though the killer in the New Zealand attack was a white Australian, it was all born out of a misunderstanding of what it means to be multicultural, to have a respect for different people of different races and different backgrounds. This is something that we're really struggling with as a world, but also particularly as a nation, and in particularly in North America, where Canada is now experiencing a wave of immigration like it can't sustain. You go to different parts of Canada and it just doesn't feel like Canada or even America. And then people will say, I love the analogy. Are we a melting pot or are we a mosaic? And the reality is, all of that is true. But there does need to be a cohesion because a mosaic that doesn't make sense is just an ugly, hot mess. And if the ingredients of this melting pot don't come together and complement each other, it's going to taste like, you know what? So we've got to work on what is the analogy that we use to describe our experience of faith. And unfortunately, I didn't really get into it with him about religion simply because my impressions were that, and he confirmed it, religion has a very small role in understanding what it means to be a Canadian, even though, you know, while religion doesn't have a lot of influence, it has a great influence. I mean, the government still pays the Catholic schools a large part of their subsidy because I guess they respect what the Catholic Church and the Catholic school system has done. But it's welcomed people from all different types of religion. So it's not just a Catholic school. They kind of rely on a couple different things in order to transmit the faith. And one of them is the parish experience. And I've been all over Canada and I'm finding that Canada's Catholicism is made up no longer of the French Catholics, but really of immigrant Catholics, you know, from the Filipinos to the Vietnamese to the Indian communities. They are all really keeping the Catholic faith alive. And it's almost like, what do the traditional Canadians, what do they think of the Catholic Church? Well, kind of irrelevant. I mean, a friend of mine, I was ordained 20 years, and my friend was a priest as well. And he was actually going shopping in Canada to these antique stores because he was finding chalices and a whole bunch of religious articles on sales because churches have just kind of abandoned them and hawked them, basically, pawned religious articles. So he was like coming away with treasure troves of religious stuff that churches had abandoned. The secularity of Canada is fine, but if it's to the point where we kind of look down on people of faith, then that is not fine. There really needs to be a greater sense of balance between the two. And I think the final thing that I learned from Chris is when I asked him, you know, what can I do to be a good priest for you? Here is a young man, an atheist or agnostic-y, secular, not religious, like I said, and just a traditional millennial, kind of working and living the dream. What he was craving for was just conversation, a sense of community, letting him know that I'm not here to judge him, but by just extending a microphone to him, we built a pretty good friendship, and I look forward to seeing him again when I go to Canada and visit my own family out there. And the idea of Canada being so close to America, they are very close to Americans. I mean, we're just close people. But I think the differences are respected because we want to return to our own country because we like the culture of our country. They don't want to necessarily enter into the culture of America, which makes them good neighbors. They go back to their own country and practice their culture there. Are you hearing what I'm saying? If we're going to come into a place and immigrate, then guess what we've got to do? Adapt to where we are emigrating. That's just all there is to it. So the melting pot does make sense as long as we work together. And the mosaic can really only be a piece of art if we're willing to blend appropriately with each other. So that's my carryout order for this show, and I hope you enjoyed it. These shows, I will admit, are challenging for some diehard Catholics because all they want me to do is talk about Catholic things. And so I'm going to be changing up the format in the coming shows, especially as I go into a whole new season of Shoot the Shiitake. I'm going to be doing some mixes, but really what I'm going to be paying attention to are what you all say if you're a premium subscriber. So for all of our premium subscribers, those who donate $10 or more each month, we thank you so much for your support. I'm going to be entertaining some of your questions in my Learning from Leftovers, our extra content for our premium subscribers this week. That'll be going into your mailbox. And again, thanks to Chris Carr White for his insight and his all of his Canadian ways. It was so totally Canadian. I'm getting hungry for a poutine right now. That's what I'm going to do, is get myself a little potato with cheese curds and gravy. Sounds so Canadian. So between now and the next time we shoot the shiitake, stay hungry. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Shoot the Shiitake, brought to you by BrandFox, the premier commerce solution for nonprofits, ministries, and the entrepreneur in all of us. It's where fulfillment, customer service, and e-commerce come together. Visit BrandFoxLLC.com. And please be sure to share this podcast with family, friends, pastors, and parishioners. Encourage them to sign up on their favorite podcast platform. And we thank you for listening and for supporting us. You can support us at shootthesheitake.com. That's shootthesheitake2eyes.com.
BreadBox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com.
CMF Curo is the country's first Catholic healthcare ministry to provide an affordable health-sharing solution rooted in Catholic teaching and community. Learn more at mycatholichealthcare.com/podcast. That's mycatholichealthcare.com/podcast.